Blog Talk Radio.
And hello out there to all you Metsian folk and beyond. This is Sam Maxwell, and you are here with a spring training games edition of the Metsian podcast. Isn't that nice to say? We got a lot to get to, so let's get right to it. Before we bring on our featured guest, let me introduce our co-conspirators in crime of podcast operations. First, starting with Mike LeCollin in Bensonhurst. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing well. Let's go Mets.
Let's go Mets indeed. And we also have Rich Spirago up in Connecticut. What's going on, Rich?
Hey, Sam. Well, how could it not be good? The New York Mets are playing baseball. It's been on our televisions and on our radios. Howie Rose is back. All these things. It's first day of spring, first full day. So it's all good. How are you?
Perfect. First full day of spring, and as Mike and I learned, it was exactly 11:33 a.m. that spring was turned, and that was brought to you by the Brooklyn Trolley blogger, Ron Schweiger, on our other podcast, the Bedford & Sullivan podcast, Shameless Plug. But without going too much on a tangent, let me bring on our featured guest. He is a Brooklyn-born Mets fan, and he's a former reporter for Yahoo Finance, and he's now doing work in comedy. And that is Mr. Reggie Wade. Reggie, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me. Big fan. Very excited to be here.
So, Reggie, I do want to get into your personal Mets history later on in the show. And when we reset around the half mark, we will. But we're going to first get into the – and because this is your first time, I'm going to go ahead and ask you, one, the off season itself, and two – everything you've seen so far once the baseball images started reappearing?
Well, probably the most memorable thing I think of this offseason was, of course, signing Matt Scherzer. That was completely out of left field. I thought he would want no part of New York because remember last year he said no Mets, no Yankees. So when they dealt him to L.A., so I thought that, hey, he doesn't want to be here. But when they said, you know, there might be a chance. I stood up to maybe 4 in the morning that night, refreshing Twitter like crazy, and eventually I think I just passed out, and it was a welcome surprise once it finally happened around like 1 the next day. So that was something. It was the first time I felt like that since we got Mike Piazza, like one of the absolute best, and now he's wearing our uniform. So special.
It's true, and we had both of those people over in Fort St. Lucie, and I'll head over first to Rich to talk about, you know, you do such a great job, and you're really our deep cut when it comes to the daily machination and everything going on within Mets world. So, Rich, Mike Piazza was in spring today. Max Scherzer pitched 5 innings. And did rather well, even if it was the first start. But again, isn't it still surreal to see him in blue and in orange and blue, and especially those spring training bright blue and orange uniforms?
It's still unbelievable. And you know, and like Reggie said, I when there was talk about him coming to the Mets last December, Mike and Reggie, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. I just got something weird on my computer. Oh, no problem. So anyway, so when there was talk about him coming to the Mets last December, I was with Reggie. I was like, there's no way this is happening. You know, he doesn't want to come to New York. He made that pretty clear. I thought it was he was playing the Mets to get a better deal somewhere else, probably go back to L.A. And then when it happened, it was like, wow. I mean, it's a Piazza-like move. You know, like you said, Reggie, I mean, you just acquired a guy who is one of the best, if not the best, at what he does. And now he's a New York Met wearing the blue and orange. You just didn't see that coming. And so it's a bit surreal to see him in Mets blue and orange. I was stalking the MLB app today to see his outing, you know, because it wasn't on TV, but to see his line as it was developing, and he ended up with 5 innings pitched, you know, 3 hits, 1 run, a bunch of strikeouts too, and wow, you know. And what do we have to see next? Well, next we have to see DeGrom go out there and do it, you know, because there are question marks. Scherzer's a bit of a question mark. DeGrom's probably a bigger one. And we have to see him go out and do it. But and then the other thing I would say about what's going on so far in spring training is Starling Marte hasn't even swung a bat. I mean, he's not even taking batting practice. And spring training is very short this year. The season starts in 2.5 weeks. He's going to have to start hitting. He's going to have to start playing. And will he be ready for opening day? I mean, the Mets are downplaying it, saying, of course he will be. Okay, maybe he will be. It's less, you know, 2.5 weeks. But it kind of makes you think, and, yeah, I know I'm being the safe is going to drop out of the sky kind of a Mets fan now. You wonder if the lack of depth on this team, especially offensively, will hurt them, especially in the outfield. And this points it up. I mean, this really points up. They just don't have a lot of depth. I'm a big Khalil Lee fan. I'd love to see him get some run. That would be fine. But he does strike out a lot. He might not be quite ready. So then I think the next thing to talk about, Sam, as I throw it back to you, is should the Mets be more aggressive than they have been in the past couple of weeks and specifically targeting an outfielder? And we all know who the number one outfielder available is, and maybe we can get into that. But back to you, Sam.
Yeah, you know, we're certainly going to get into Mr. Michael Conforto, who some people are forgetting, mainly the Mets right now, it seems. So, Mike, you know, you, like you said, if you open up yourself, baseballs would fall out. So now that baseball is back in its cyclical nature, where are you with the Mets so far?
I have baseball concerns. I'll pick up where the guys left off, Reggie and Rich. Starling Marte, okay, he's injured. Let's see when it gets back. But all eyes are back on Brandon Nimmo. And, you know, he needs to have a full, healthy season. You know, I think the onus is on him more so than Marte. At least Marte is a proven product. Nimmo, he still needs to prove himself. He needs to prove that he can, you know, endure a full season. And especially this upcoming season, that's going to be a lot more compressed with less days off. So there's going to be a lot of time management here. That's my first concern. My other concern is Max Scherzer. I'm not concerned per se, but again, spring training, as Rich said, is short. We missed a lot of time. We missed at least, what, a month of just working out, stretching, getting limber, and warming up, et cetera, et cetera. And Max Scherzer is out there throwing 72 pitches. That concerns me. He might be a bull. He might be a workhorse. But I don't want to see people trying to overexert themselves to get into regular season shape. There's that old saying, haste makes waste. So injuries are a concern of mine. You know, I think injuries are going to be a concern for most clubs if they don't manage their players well and smartly. So that's all. I'll leave it at that. You know, we have a compressed spring training, and that may cause complications. So I don't want to. 72 pitches is just odd for me, the first time out.
Yeah, it was certainly odd for me too. Reggie, where were you on how many pitches? You know, like I saw something about, oh, Max Scherzer, he's such a beast, but like people are just seeing it as baseball's back and look what Max Scherzer did. Do you think that regardless of whether there's a difference between throwing pitches out situations and potentially considering how ingrained Max Scherzer was in all of these negotiations, is it less of a concern considering that they're trying to get, you know, rev it up quickly and they've probably been doing some form of revving it up already?
Yeah, I definitely think so. The numbers kind of jarring. You see right off the bat 72 pitches. But like you said, these guys, they do their work in the offseason. And I even think in an interview he was saying that he's been revving up, you know, before this. So I think he's going to be fine. And that's what we see a lot from the modern athletes, a lot more working out in the offseason, especially NBA players. You see they post their workouts in the summer. So I just think that's the kind of athlete we have these days, a lot of off-season preparation. So I think he's probably right on schedule.
Rich, honestly, total disclaim. I had to bounce for a hot second to try to figure my internet thing out. But so if you've already mentioned this, excuse me, but in terms of the pitches that Max Scherzer threw, where are you on it?
It is strange for him to throw 72 pitches in his first outing, but what's ironic is right before we went on the air, I was watching the Nats-Cardinals game, spring training game, live, and the Nats announcers were talking about Scherzer. They were going around the division and talking about what the various teams have done. They talked about the Mets with DeGrom and Scherzer, and even they said, oh, you know, Max threw 72 pitches today, but they said that he marches to his own drum when it comes to that. He's in freakish shape, you know, pitching shape. I'm not going to comment on his, you know, personal shape. He's in freakish pitching shape. He always is. He's a workhorse, and he just does things differently than most pitchers. He doesn't generally ramp it up. It's not abnormal for him. Of course, we don't necessarily know that as Mets fans. It was our first year seeing him. But according to the Nats broadcasters, he's always been like that. He's never been I'll take it easy, give me two innings, then three, then four. He's been the guy who wants the ball. You know, you've heard – when the Mets played the Dodgers in that Sunday night game last year, and Dave Roberts was Mike, and he was telling the story about how the first start Scherzer made for the Dodgers after going there in the middle of the year, Roberts takes him out, and Roberts goes to pat him on the back, literally just put his arm on him and say, great job, Max. And he said, don't, you know, freaking, didn't use that word, touch me. It's just he's a very intense kind of a guy, you know, and he's a competitor. He's a workhorse. So 72 pitches, long way of saying, if you told me it was any other 37-year-old in the first start of a truncated spring training throwing 72 pitches, damn right I'd be concerned. I'd be like, what in the hell? Who the hell's running the show here? That doesn't sound logical. But from what I'm hearing, it's Max Scherzer. It's who he is, you know, and we have to get used to that as Mets fans. We just don't know this guy. And the good news is that it doesn't seem like it was out of character.
That's a good thing to hear, that is for sure. So, Rich, I'm going to go right back to you here. Other than Max, what has popped up on your mind regarding, other than the fact that the Mets really need to work on that depth, in terms of the depth that is here, what have you seen? What are some names that we really should be kind of keeping an eye on that you think a lot of people are kind of underestimating right now?
You know, I'm going to throw a name out there that makes most Mets fans cringe. You can probably see some coming a mile away. Cano, Robinson Cano. From what I understand, I know, Mike, you tend to watch the Caribbean leagues in the winter. I do not. Everything I've heard from – they were talking about it yesterday in the broadcast, that Cano looked like a new man. Like he looked like the Yankees version of Cano, swinging sweetly when he played in the Dominican Republic this winter. And you know what? And while a lot of us want to say, oh, God, come on, Steve, you have all this money, just eat his contract and get rid of him, the Mets need a good left-handed bat. They need him. I mean, they need a good Cano. Because when you think about it, right, think about this lineup top to bottom. It's pretty heavily right-handed. And so you've got McNeil, that's true. You know, you've got McNeil as second baseman, but to me, he's a table setter. He's not a run producer. Okay. Then you look around. You know, there aren't a lot of left-handed bats in the lineup. Nimmo's up top of the lineup as well. So, especially in the absence of Conforto, you need a left-handed bopper in there. And that guy right now is Cano. I mean, Dom, where's he going to play? At this point, I don't know, but the DH on a daily basis, at least most of the time, is going to be Cano if he's here. And they need him to be good. So that's one thing that kind of sticks out to me is The absence of Conforto, the absence of a big left-handed bat in the middle of the lineup is a bit concerning. So that's one thing. And I want to see DeGrom. He threw well, you know, threw his bullpens well. That's great. I want to see him throw a couple of games. And remember, this man has not taken the mound, and to use a term, has not thrown a pitch in anger since early July. What's he going to be? Is he going to be five innings and then take him out because, oh, you know, this time it was my elbow's a little balky, this time it was my forearm a little balky, and 10 days on the DL, then he's back. Is he going to be that? Or is he fully where he needs to be physically, and he's going to go out there, you know, on average 110 pitches a start, you know, getting you into the seventh inning? To me, that is the most intriguing storyline for this team because they need him. They're, you know, the Braves are a better offensive team than the Mets are. They are. And the Phillies are too. So the Mets are going to have to win based on pitching, and they certainly can. But DeGrom has to be the one leading the way. He's got to be healthy. And I want to see that on the field. So those are my storylines is Mets need to win with pitching. It's going to start and stop with DeGrom, in my opinion. Maybe not. Maybe that's a little dramatic. They have Scherzer. But DeGrom's a huge part of it. And they need a left-handed bat. They've got one. He's almost 40 years old, but they need a good Robinson Cano as a DH. So that's where I am.
That is a good place to start. So, Reggie, Cano and DeGrom mm-hmm. And the Mets offense.
You know what, Cano, and I'm sure this is for a lot of Mets fans, you forgot that he was on the team during portions of last year. But I did get a little excited when I heard he was wrapping it up, and I heard he did tear it up in the Dominican League. He could definitely be an X-factor. He's even the slight bit of what he once was. But my thing is, I wonder how the chemistry is going to be. He's been off of the team for so long, and that's one thing that worries me a little bit. What is the makeup of this clubhouse? A lot of new guys, and let's say they resign Conforto and put him in that mix. A lot of juggling. There's a DH now in the NL for the first time. So that's one of my concerns. How is this group going to meld together? I know last year we had Lindor and McNeil, and they showed the growing pains of new teammates. I don't think anyone's going to choke anyone out this year, hopefully not so early in the year. But that's the one thing that concerns me. How is this group going to gel together? And how is Buck really going to handle all that? He's been out of the dugout for a while, but he's one of the best. So I'm really interested to see how he mixes all these different components.
Yeah, it's just so many different things. Like I clicked on Conforto, who's trending at least in my time feed, and something that somebody brought up that is X factor that we haven't even talked about, and we will later on the podcast, and that is the mandate within New York City regarding vaccination. However, I would like to throw it to Mike first to talk about Cano, DeGrom, and the Mets offense.
The Mets offense. I hope they go into this season with a more simplified philosophy at the plate. That will go a long way towards, you know, getting runs across the plate for everyone. We need, obviously, a good season out of Lindor, Alonso. And then after that, you know, a lot of people still have to prove their worth. Pitching-wise, I got my fingers crossed for Carlos Carrasco. I really hope he comes back and has a strong season. He's getting up there, but between Carlos Carrasco and, you know, the new acquisition, Chris Bassitt, we know we have a 1-2 punch in DeGrom and Scherzer, you know, but in order to advance deep into the playoffs, we need that third starter. We need that fourth starter. So I hope that those two gentlemen, well, I hope that Carrasco is healthy and strong and can complete the season in good form. I hope Bassitt can transition over to the National League in good fashion. And, you know, Peterson, I hope he competes because we're going to need that lefty, either in the bullpen or in the starting rotation. So I have my fingers crossed for this rotation first and foremost. That's my priority. The starting top five Obviously, we have bullpen issues, but the starting top five to me can either make or break us. You know, so I got my fingers crossed for Brasco. I'm hoping Bassett proves his worth, and that maybe this lineup will gel together again with a more simplified approach at the plate, with less pollution in their brains, and just go up there and in a little bit of old-fashioned sense, see ball, hit ball, you know, and we'll see what happens.
See ball, hit ball, put them where they ain't. So you brought up so many things, including Peterson, but I'm going to save Peterson because, and I don't know how much truth there is. It's just one of, it's not anybody, you know, verified, but Diane M. Mets South Florida, who we see frequently on Mets Twitter, just reminds us that he isn't vaxxed. Mets can't sign anyone else that falls under this category. NBC is being ridiculous, but seems Mets' hands will be tied. They will be down players already. Can't add more to that. Rich, I will start with you here. What, you know, I think that my personal opinion, without getting too political about it, is that there isn't a proper reaction to the science and the data as it comes in. But Eric Adams is sticking firmly and maybe waiting a little closely to the beginning of the season, especially now that he doesn't have to really make a decision until April 7th. So what is your opinion on this? Where are you on whether that is one of the things that, at least for the Mets, is holding up Michael Conforto being signed?
It's an interesting angle. I don't think that's what it is. I hear it. I get it. But at the same time, you know, okay, here's why I think Conforto isn't signed. Two reasons. Number one, the Mets probably, and nor does any other team, want to give Conforto a long-term deal, because we know that Conforto, when he's good, he's very good, and when he's bad, he's pretty bad. So why would any team really think about it? If you were the GM of a team, would you commit 6 years? And that was probably his initial ask, was for roughly 5 to 6 years. That's what these guys are getting. That's what Freeman got. That's what these big free agents are getting. With a couple of exceptions, but that's generally what these folks are getting. So why would you? I don't think I would. And I love Conforto. I don't think I'd give him more than a 2 to 3 year contract at this point. And that's definitely not what he wants. That's one thing. Another reason is the Mets payroll. I did a story on this for Mesmerize Sunday. Mets payroll right now is $250 million. They're $20 million over the tax. So you bring in Conforto at, what, $20 million for one? Maybe his luxury tax at $20 million. Now they're at $270. Now they're $40 million over the threshold. They have to pay a 25% tax on the $40 million. That's $10 million more. That's $50 million. Now your payroll is $300 million. So I think those are the main reasons you haven't seen a Conforto reunion yet. The vaccination thing, probably, I mean, it's there. It doesn't help. You know, where Mayor Adams is going to take this, we don't know. He's held firm so far on basketball. So, I mean, will he change his stance because baseball's outside? Maybe. I think that's a fairly valid reason, actually, to me. But it's up to him. And the New York City Health Department's not up to me. So I'm not sure that the vaccination status is a big part of it. I just don't think it helps. But I think it's a distant third factor, if at all, in the Conforto decision, honestly. But, you know, when you think about that, what I've read is the team that benefits most from this, not only New York, but generally, are the Blue Jays. Because the Blue Jays, when they're in Toronto, all these players weren't vaccinated, they can't come into Canada and play. Could you imagine if nothing changes? And
Jesus.
Like the Yankees, I mean, could you imagine? I don't HIPAA, right? We don't know. We're not supposed to know people's medical status, but there's rumor that Aaron Judge is not vaccinated, so he can't go into. I don't know if he is or he isn't. But if he isn't, he can't go into Canada and play. The Red Sox, from what I understand, were with our beloved New York Mets among the least vaccinated teams last year. So if the Red Sox can't bring a bunch of guys across the border, The Yankees have a couple of key players who, from what I'm hearing, are not vaccinated. Imagine the impact on those teams when they go to play the team that might just be the favorite. Could you imagine going in there to play them with somewhere between 3 and 8 of your top guys not able to cross the border into Canada? Could you imagine what we're going to watch? But then that brings us back to New York City. I think you might see a relaxation in New York City before you see one in Canada, because Canada's locked and loaded on this thing. I mean, they don't let anybody in, you know, if you're not vaccinated. So it might become the vaccination thing this year, Conforto or no Conforto, might become an issue for the Mets, the Yankees, and particularly, you know, the American League teams that have to go to Toronto.
It's going to be interesting watching it unfold. Reggie, wherever you want to go from there.
Yeah, the Conforto thing, you know, you're fighting for me between your head and your heart. You know, I remember Conforto came up. He had those 2 big home runs in the 2015 World Series. He's a homegrown guy, so you want him to sign back. But like everyone's been saying, 5 or 6 years for him, we don't know. He had a bad season last year, season before that, had his best season of his career, but that was a 60-game shortened season. So I kind of understand the misapprehension, and we see the story that came out that he supposedly turned down on $100 million contract. And I'm thinking maybe Mets are making him sweat a little bit, a little payback for that. Like, we try to give you $100 million, and you slap our hand away? Like, come on. So I think that may be – I think they're going to get it done eventually and bring him back to Queens, because everyone's pretty much signed. I mean, who else is there to go after?
It's a great question. Mike, going with that, the kind of season Conforto had was certainly screaming qualifying offer, 1-season deal, 2 seasons at best. But he's hedging his bets, and so is Scott Boras, on the track record and the fact that he got better as the season went along. But he only got marginally better and hit his career average, which is a few points lower than we truly believe Conforto should be designed to hit. And that was about 252. We have always thought that this guy can win a batting title at his finest. But he seems, over the course of his Mets career, other than some injury bad luck, really, I would say that he's been a 252 hitter, but he should be a 350 hitter because he's gotten into some bad habits. Where are you with this, Mike?
You guys covered it all. As Reggie said, you know, there's the conflict between our head and our heart. We all love Conforto. We really do. But he hasn't performed up to the dollar price that he's asking or his agent is asking. Boras wants premium dollar. And my problem is that Conforto, in all his years wearing a Mets uniform, has never carried the team, be it for a 2-week, 3-week, or a 1-month span. He's never achieved that. He's had spurts and sparks, but he's never been that premium alpha, or at least, you know, the type that Boras is seeking compensation for. If he wants to come back on a 1-year deal, I don't care about the dollar price. Let him come back for 1 year, try to reprove himself, and toss himself back out on the open market. That's baseball. That's capitalism. That's cool. That's fine by me. 2 years, Sam? No, I'm not entertaining it. And I'm not entertaining a long year, a long-term deal with them either. He still has, as a Met fan, he still needs to prove himself. I'm sorry, he just didn't do that for me throughout his career here. Good here, good there. He had those shining moments in the World Series, as Reggie mentioned. But he's never been the type to carry the team. And because he's so beloved, we seem to overlook that. And you know me, I'm just the eternal pragmatist. So unless he gets that one-year deal and reproves himself based on his previous performances, I'm not giving him a long-term deal. I'm just not. Let the Angels do it.
$21 million, 1 year after just two innings? Yeah, why not? Yeah. You are listening to the Metsian Podcast. We are here with Reggie Wade, a Brooklyn-born Mets fan. So, Reggie, please tell our audience your Mets story.
Oh, well, again, thank you again for being here. You guys are tremendous. And, yeah, I was born September 26, 1986. The Mets win the World Series October 27, 1986. So I guess I was born to be a Mets fan. So that was it. I was a Mets fan actually before I was a baseball fan. My grandfather was an old-school Brooklyn Dodgers fan. When they left in 58, I believe, eventually he became a Mets fan, and that's how he raised me in the orange and blue. I went to my first game in 1992. They beat the Pirates 4-3, but I still wasn't much of a baseball fan. I just knew that the Mets were the family team. And in 1997, one evening, I walked into my grandfather's bedroom, and I heard music, and he was watching something, and there was a laser show. And I said, "Grandpa, what are you watching?" He said, "This is the World Series." It was the Marlins versus the Cleveland Indians. And I was just so caught up in the pageantry, and then and there, I said, next year, I'm going to get into this. And what a year to get into baseball, 98. You had the Maguire-Sosa home run chase. The Mets were finally good for the first time in 10 years. They almost made the wild card. There was, I think, a game or maybe two games behind the Cubs. And I was hooked. And, I mean, they say baseball will break your heart more than women. I think I've cried more over baseball than I have my love life because, I mean, 99 was heartbreaking when Kenny Rogers walked Gerald Williams in the 99 NLCS, then 2000, they make the World Series, and it's against the dreaded Yankees, and my best friend was a Yankee fan, so he really gave me the business, but I was hooked. Those are some of my fondest memories those years, so it's been roller coasters with this team, ups and downs, good times and bad times, but I bleed orange and blue. I love all sports, but the Mets are definitely my favorite team.
That's beautiful, and it somewhat mirrors the way that I got into baseball, not only in that 98 season, but also that 97 season, I'm sorry, that 97 World Series, even as Mets fans looking back on it, considering that we just missed the playoffs that year, there's just something about that the way that series played out, and I believe all the home teams won. I remember very distinctly about that they kept going back and forth. Literally, the Marlins ended up winning every odd game, which, of course, in a seven-game series, that's going to bode well for you. But I have my own personal way I got to the Mets, and the Marlins were along that journey, but that's a story that you can find at convertedmetsfan.blogspot.com, shameless plug. I will go back to you, Reggie. Tell that story about Game 6, 1986, with you as a baby, if you could tell what you know about that story, considering you probably don't remember it exactly.
No, I don't. Hopefully I don't get too emotional because it involves my grandfather, and he unfortunately isn't here. But, yeah, my mother tells me that I was raised in Brooklyn. I was actually born in Arizona. My parents were in the Army, and they brought me here. I was only a few weeks old. And they had kind of like a baby shower, and it happened to be during Game 6. So all the men in my house were up, and my mother says that I was sleeping. And when the ball rolled under Bill Buckner's leg, everyone went crazy, and it scared me and woke me up. She thought that they killed her newborn. And so that was like my first unconscious introduction. So the Mets have technically won a World Series in my lifetime, but I want to actually see one.
Exactly, don't we all? And we're going to keep going on with what we hope to be. We're going to keep talking about what we hope to be a World Series championship at the end of this year. But, Mike, I'll go to you first. You know, even with Steve Cohen, who you can still tell that, though it may take some time, everything is being done in a better fashion on every single possible level. However, we do keep running into these same what-ifs. Like, these are similar conversations that we've had under the Wilpons and with the Mets in general. So is it just that you know, getting accustomed period, do you think? Or is it also a combination of Met fans just being a little too antsy and not completely understanding where the roster and the finances and everything that we can't see where they currently are? Or is it just what kind of carry? I guess it's just it's what happens with the Mets. You always have to believe one way or another.
You got to believe. Sign of the times. I really don't know where to go insofar as answering that. You know, everyone's got their own way. Sign of the times. Different people, different emotions, different emojis. Hard to say. The Steve Cohen era, look, I'm happy that we're not here talking about Sandy Alderson, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I'm just glad we're not talking about him. I'm glad we're not talking about the Wilpons. You know, Steve Cohen is an issue because of his money, and the other owners of baseball made it an issue. And we nicknamed this the Steve Cohen tax. So, you know, we have a new set of folly, you know, being thrown at us now. But it's completely different. Otherwise, this is business as usual. This is New York City. The minutia here just runs wild. So many outlets, tabloids, internet, TV, radio, you know, insofar as outlets and information, there's as much traffic insofar as that as there are cars on the street. You go to another town, and, you know, not so much. So part of this is just business as usual. Part of this is, as you say, just Mets anxiety over the years. Look, Reggie is still technically waiting for his first World Series victory, as am I. And I'm 55 years old. And Reggie, I was in Germany, West Germany at the time, in 1986. When the Mets won that World Series. Okay, so I'm still waiting too, brother. I'm still waiting too. You know, so we all, we all have, as Mets fans, we all have our idiosyncrasies and our issues, and you know, we all battle with them. But this is a new era, and I like it. I like the course it's taking so far. You know, we said a couple of times on this podcast that for the moment, Steve Cohen's money needs to prop this team up and support it until we rebuild the farm system and we can graduate talent en masse, and then you'll see the salary payroll, you know, decrease to the satisfaction of the central divisions, you know, and that's who I blame, you know, that's them. But I like where we are, you know, and we're just dealing with a new playing field, a new turf. That's all.
It's funny to me, Rich, that, like, looking back on it now, I think that the era of 2011 to 2014, really 2009 to 2014, is going to be, for me, what 1977 through 1983 was for many Met fans, including yourself. With everything I just mentioned, as well as that, go ahead.
Well, yeah, it takes some getting used to. You know, when I mentioned the article I did for Mets Horizon, and when I was looking at the payrolls, to see the Mets number two ahead of the Yankees in payroll, obviously only behind the Dodgers, it's a new era, and we have to get used to it. And so, you know, I think it's in the nature of the Met fan to focus on the negative and you know, make a mountain out of a molehill. you see, if you do social media during the games, you see people overreacting to an at-bat in spring training. I saw it yesterday. You know, nothing ever changes. The guy grounded out with men on base. I mean, come on, second game of spring training. You know, I think it's going to take some getting used to. I think, like Mike was saying, this is really the first year where we're seeing the Steve Cohen influence, where we're seeing second highest payroll in baseball. God willing, they're in contention later in the season. They will be willing to add payroll. They've already blown through the luxury tax. They'll just keep blowing some more if they have to, provided they're in contention. It's going to take some time to get used to it because you're right. You know, there was a dark period there that was very similar, actually, Sam, to the analogy you used of 77-83, because in 77-83 it was the M. Donald Grant thing and, you know, the Mets mule and all those silly things that they were trying to do. They weren't investing in the team. They were in the doldrums. You know, that was kind of like from the 2009 to the 2012 season where they were tearing it down, not spending any money. Remember when Sandy Alderson went to the winter meeting and he said he had $10 million to spend? I mean, that's nothing, right? I mean, when you have to add
Let me also say that the fans that went through 2009 to 2014, if they did some research on the 1977 to 1983 period, we were lucky, you know. Mind you, like, it is more so even than those teams, it is a tale of what should have been, because the Wilpons and that entire era, especially after their initial big era post-Doubleday, 2005 to 2008, that era of 2009 to 2014 is substantially more successful, but riddled with what, just like you saw front and center where better decisions on a micro level would have led to possibly not only better teams, but a world championship.
That's funny. Well, I would like to conduct a Twitter poll one day and find out who fans believe might have been more reviled, either M. Donald Grant or Jeff Wilpon. I'm curious to see those results.
That would be fascinating because they were both the focal point of the wrath, right? Because what was going on was, you know, 2015 came out of nowhere because they still didn't seem to be spending a lot of money. Let's not forget, 2015, they were putting a lineup out there that had, Ty Kelly and John Mayberry out there, you know, at various times. So it still looked like the penny-pinching Mets, and they were. It's just that the pitchers were young and under control, and they were able to prop them up until they were, you know, then they had no choice but to add Cespedes at the deadline. But it's the same feeling, you know, when you're 77-83 or 2009 to 2000 through 2014, where you kind of felt like you knew that they really didn't have a shot because they were tearing it down. They weren't going to spend if something, you know, miraculous did happen. The owners didn't want to put money into the team. It's the same thing as 77-83. And in both cases, you know, the young pitching propped them up to get them out of the doldrums. So, yeah, and Mike, I would love to participate in your Twitter poll. I'd have to give that some thought. I don't know who I would vote for.
Reggie, speaking of you gotta believe, I am looking at Eduardo Escobar's numbers here. And I think that as we talk about the offense dropping off, sure, he has not necessarily consistently done what I am looking at over the course of his career. However, I think this could be the sleeper of the Mets offense. When you're looking at what he did last year, 2021 with two teams, he hit 28 home runs and 90 RBIs with a .253 batting average. And, you know, everybody keeps pointing at Jeff McNeil being the second baseman. I mean, I don't see how this guy is not the starting second baseman when the last full season he had in 2019 – with Arizona, he had 35 home runs and 118 RBIs with a .269 batting average. And he's got some other, you know, he's been basically consistently growing with 23 home runs and 84 RBIs in 2018 between, I believe, what I'm assuming is Minnesota and Arizona, and I'm correct. So, wherever you want to go with, this is the thing, is that Met fans haven't seen this guy yet, but this was a stealth move early on.
It really wasn't. I have an uncle that lives out in Arizona. He's a Met fan, but he watches the Diamondbacks. And when the Mets got Escobar, he says, you guys got a really good player. He said, this guy, when he's on, he can hit. He can field. Quality player. So I was really happy once I heard my uncle, because he knows his baseball, say that about him. But, yeah, I really think it can be a sequel. Literally no one, all the acquisitions, no one's talking about that. So I think we're going to be pleasantly surprised. But I wanted to touch on, I agree with what everyone is saying about Steve Cohen and, you know, the Cohen tax. I think his presence and what he's done, I think it scares the baseball world to death. And not to get two conspiracy theorists filled here, but I think MLB was very happy with the complacent Mets. It fit a narrative. And they're like, okay, we have this league. The Yankees going to spend money. The Red Sox going to spend money. The Dodgers are going to spend money. The usual suspects. And here comes Steve Cohen, and he has a big wallet in a big market. And MLB was like, whoa, we weren't ready for this. And the other teams are like, hey, this doesn't fit the script of the penny pinching Mets. And now this is another team we got to worry about now. So I think it freaked everyone out, and I absolutely love it.
And I apologize for not transitioning to that for you. For some weird reason, I think my trajectory and narrative of the podcast was thrown off. But I think it's that you got to believe that even though what you're saying is true and that baseball wasn't ready for it, the question is, with everything that we just talked about, was the Met fan ready for it? So, Mike, I'll loop back to you. And this is something I accuse the Wilpons of playing into way too much. Do you remember when Jeff Wilpon handed out underdog shirts, literally the dog underdog cartoon shirts out in spring training? I thought the Wilpons were guilty of leaning way too much into the Mets brand. They didn't want to get their shit together because they knew they'd always have You Gotta Believe.
Oh. I just said I was happy that we weren't talking about the Wilpons, and here we are. I'm depressed all over again. They just didn't get it. They just didn't get it. And Fred had more loyalty to the Dodgers than he had the Met brand. We know this. And, you know, when you hand over your organization to your son, who has no practical knowledge of what he's doing, well, you get comments like Nelson Doubleday's. But we don't have to go down that rabbit hole. You know what, Sam? I'll put you back on track. We threw you a little change-up. You swung and missed. So here's the next pitch. I'll get back to Eduardo Escobar and very quickly say I believe in late bloomers. And the fact that he's a switch hitter, he's going to prove invaluable to the Mets, I think.
Rich, get us help continue the track to the next station. Let's say it's Croton on Hudson. Eduardo Escobar.
Sure. I mean, here's a guy who's a versatile player. You know, can play second, can play third. Switch hitter, like you said. Certainly, you know, looking at his numbers here, you know, one season he had 35 home runs, so the guy's got some pop. And 28 home runs in 22. So he certainly can hit the ball at the ballpark. Versatile, the kind of player you want. Switch hitter, it's like multiple players in one. Fine. You know, I think that's great. When you look at the other acquisitions, though, right, Escobar, you know, check. You know, good acquisition. Starling Marte, I love him. I mean, I love the fact that they acquired the stolen base leader in the American League last year. I love speed. You know, we know that. I've talked about that all the time on this podcast. So, but the problem is with him, you got to keep him on the field. And from what I understand, I didn't know much about Marcana, But he also has had some difficulty staying on the field over the years. So I'm going to be a broken record. What does that tell you? It tells you you need major league depth. That is my concern with this team. We talked about it last week. It's a lot of these guys are in their early to mid-30s. So even if you don't have injury concerns, they were talking about it yesterday in the broadcast. How do you keep these guys fresh? Well, maybe it's a bit more of a challenge with a team that's, you know, where guys are 32, 33 years old and on a team where they're 26 or 27. So, but that, and that's not even considering the injuries, and some of these guys are injury prone. McNeil too. McNeil's had some issues. So here I'm being the guy we talked about. You know, I'm being the Met fan who wasn't ready for the prosperity yet because we're three games into spring training and I'm already worried about depth and about the age of the team, but I think those are real things. I'm just grizzled and old is what it comes down to. But these are real things, and to a point where, you know, I felt somewhat vindicated yesterday that it wasn't just stuff I'm cooking up in my head. They actually devoted it, you know, time to it on the TV broadcast. So anyway, these are the things we have to think about. You know, Escobar is probably of the Canna, Escobar, Marte, probably the safest bet. Maybe not the highest ceiling of those guys. Maybe that belongs to Marte. But Escobar seems to be able to stay on the field. He does what he does. He's versatile. He's a switch hitter. Great. The other guys, if they can keep him on the field. And I didn't realize that Canna has a tendency to get hit by pitches. They were talking about that yesterday. I had no idea that he gets hit that much. But that's not good either for staying on the field, right? So anyway.
As long as it's
not the hand, ties it all together. Well, yeah. Well, how many times do you see a player get hit in the hand? Like, oh, there's so many little bones in the hand, right?
Ugh. And, I mean, there's so many other pieces to this puzzle we haven't even mentioned. I'm sure we're going to go there, Sam. But, you know, let's face it. A guy like James McCann, he needs to do better at the plate. We might even see a little bit of Khalil lead this year. Because, as Rich says, you know, there's great potential for injury here. So, you know, this is going to be a work in progress. I really think we're going to see a lot of people in and out. And, you know, it's funny we haven't even mentioned J.D. Davis yet. What kind of role is he going to play? He's going to slide right in. He's going to slide right in. Why? Because we need him. Necessity is the mother of all invention, right? Same applies with baseball. So it's going to be very interesting.
You know, J.D. Davis, he's kind of become Rich. He's kind of become a player with, you know, lost in the shuffle in many ways. And I guess, you know, when it's saying second baseman, but I guess the idea right now is to play Eduardo Escobar at third base all the time, so McNeil can be inserted in second base. But I guess it's basically a rotating collection of players in left field. Considering JD's played left field, Dom has played left field, and so has McNeil.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. Let's start with that. If you're a championship contending team, a team that considers itself to at least be a contender for a championship, I'm sorry, you're not playing Dom Smith and JD Davis in left field. It doesn't work. These guys are not outfielders. Their numbers are horrible defensively out there, especially Davis. That's not where you want to be. You know, you don't want to be doing that. So I really think it's all the more reason why they have to – we talked about this back in November before the lockout. They have to sort these parts out. Okay, great. The National League has a DH. Wonderful. You've got Cano. Maybe you need a right-handed complement for that. I'm not sure who that is. But maybe that's J.D. Davis. Fine. Where does Dom Smith fit on this team? Where does J.D. Davis fit on this team? If you want to somehow, maybe there's some team that'll take Cano at the end of spring training, great. Dom becomes your left-handed hitting DH, and some could argue he should be at first base, and Pete should be DHing because Dom's a better first baseman. Okay, fine. But this team has a lot of pieces. It's like a jigsaw puzzle you put out on the table. You have to find out where all these pieces are going to play together because right now, if you want my opinion, if you put all these guys in a pot, J.D. Davis, Dom Smith, Jeff McNeil, Pete, because, yeah, Pete wants to play first base. Okay, he's gotten better defensively, absolutely. But you have – and Cano, you've got all these guys who kind of don't really have a position. I mean, Pete kind of does, but Dom, is he a left fielder? Is he a first baseman? Is he DH? Cano, is he a second baseman? Is he DH? McNeil, left field, second base. J.D. Davis, what in the hell does he do? I mean, you know, you don't want him in the field defensively. He's shown you that. But you already have a DH. Or do you want him to be a platoon DH? I don't know. They've got some sorting out to do. I don't think they're done. I do think they're going to have to trade one or two major league pieces because it just – tell me if I'm wrong, guys. I'm asking you, not telling you. It just doesn't seem like there are a lot of good quality players here. But they're not necessarily all complementary. There are just some guys who are out of place. And I'd like to see them move some of these guys and maybe bring in, you know, maybe obviously for a J.D. Davis, a Donovan Smith, a Jeff McNeil, any combination of those guys, you're not going to get a star outfielder. But maybe you can get a fourth outfielder. I would have loved to have seen them sign Andrew McCutchen. He would have been perfect as a fourth out, right-handed bat, fourth outfielder. All right, but maybe you have to move some of these guys to address a need because you're thin in the outfield. I just hope when they break camp, they don't have this collection of – it's like in Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the island of the misfit toys. I don't want these misfit toys. I want these guys to fit together.
You say it very well, Rich. And to me, the onus is on Billy Epler. He inherited this mess. So my eyes are on him. How is he going to rectify this?
Reggie, right away.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. So many different moving parts. And with the DH, that's a wild card now, the DH in the NL. And we used to see it all the time when NL teams would go to AL parks. The AL would have their regular DH, and they would just throw somebody in there. But they can't think like that anymore. I think they would benefit from a consistent DH, but unfortunately, I don't think we're going to have that. I think we are going to see Cano. We're going to see Dom Smith. Davis is going to be rotating, and I think that might be to the detriment of our lineup because I don't think guys are going to get enough at bats to get comfortable and get into a groove. So as much as I love Dom and all these guys, I think you're right that maybe they should have thought about moving some of these guys out of the way to have a little more consistency in terms of lineup.
So, Reggie, I'll go right back to you. We keep talking about this stuff in terms of regular Mets fandom, a way of thinking about all of it, right? So, if there's anybody who can sort through these moving pieces, like never before seen by a Mets fan, is that man Buck Showalter. Reggie, go ahead.
I want to hope so. I'm going to tell you what a maniac I am. I got a customized Buck Showalter jersey at Citi Field. They were having a special on customization. They said I was the first person ever to get a manager on the jersey. So that I'm all in on Buck. He's great. The only thing that worries me, and I've seen he's been joking around a little bit, I'm like, hey, is this the older, softer Buck? I kind of want the older, curmudgeonly Buck. I don't want him to be too soft. So I think if he's still the same old Buck, I think it's going to work. But that's the only thing that worries me. Like, is Buck getting a little softer in his older age? I hope not.
Rich, go ahead.
I'm totally all in on Buck. And I think like it's what Mike and Reggie said, a combination thereof. Billy Epler has to the guy has to know that these pieces don't all make sense. So it's up to him to do that. It's up to him to do something with the roster to make it so the pieces can fit together. And then Buck takes over to make them fit together. I think he's perfect. You know, you heard it. They were talking about it on the broadcast. A team with a lot of new faces, absolutely. Buck is the perfect guy to help them gel together. It is not his rodeo, not his first rodeo, to use a cliche. So a veteran manager like that who knows people, he knows he's been around guys who, you know, teams of veterans, teams of younger players, teams with a lot of new faces, teams with no new faces. He knows how to dance these dances. He could make this team gel in terms of the personality, the clubhouse chemistry. He is, in my opinion, absolutely the right guy. I think that's step two. Like Mike said, step one is pulling back and saying, okay, you know, we don't need four DHs on the roster. We need a maximum of two. So we have to address that situation. We don't need J.D. Davis in left field and calling him a that's the way to get his bat in the lineup. Oh, hell no to that. No, we don't. Championship teams don't put J.D. Davis in left field. Sorry, you just don't do it. So if you have to move some pieces around, that's Billy. We need you to do that first by April 7th. And then Buck, Billy, you're out of the picture until the trade deadline. Buck, it's up to you to make these guys gel, and I have no doubt Buck could do it. And Reggie, I'm not much for buying those jerseys, but I will buy a Buck Showalter jersey.
Happy about that, brother.
I forget what number he is, but I was going to say, you know, the Showalter will also 11. Be the highest rated managerial jersey in the history of the New York Mets. I do know that
yes,
Mark 11. Healy, our friend Mark Healy's father, looks exactly like Terry Collins, so he actually does have a customized Terry Collins jersey. That's the only other instance except for arguably Gil Hodges, but he also, Gil, it was, you know, also a player with the Mets, so you could, you know, but he, I think, is more renowned as a manager. The reason for Gil's lore with this team is not because he was a 1962 New York Met one way or another, but Mike, what's your answer?
Buck, as Rich said, we discussed, he's the right man for this time, for this team, for the next 3 years. Good baseball people fit anywhere, even New York City. You know, in this town, competency shines through. And when you have that, even though Buck is dealing with, you know, newer generations, younger generations now, there's still a sense of command and control that players appreciate. And I think that's what Buck brings to the table. You know, he will have control of that room, whereas previously, I think the players were running wild with the locker room narrative. We can point to many instances. I don't believe that will happen with Buck. There will be fun. Players will have their fun. They will be individual at times, but still I think Buck will control the room and the narrative coming out of that locker room. So I'm very satisfied. But all eyes are on Billy Epler, as we've been saying. You know, Buck is just out there to make the lineup and make decisions and, you know, do what's in the best interest of the uniformed members of the Mets. Who wears that uniform? Billy Epler needs to decide that. This is the only hockey stick I'll throw into the spokes. We know that the coming regular season is going to be compressed and off days are going to be, you know, at a minimum. And therefore, you know, they're going to mean a lot when they do get them. Perhaps shuffling these players in and out of the lineup on a somewhat regular basis, the Dom Smiths, the J.D. Davises with everyone else, might be in the best interest of the Mets, a la Gil Hodges, when he implemented his platoon system. I'm not saying that this kind of talent warrants a platoon system. I'm just saying the schedule, in order to keep everybody fresh, flexible, functional, and productive, we might have to inject these guys, force these guys into the lineup and make a player sit here and make a player sit there. What do you guys think of that?
I'll jump in on it for a second. I think, Mike, if they still have J.D. Davis, one thing they can do against a really tough lefty, you sit McNeil. You slide Escobar to second and put J.D. Davis to third. He does mash lefties, no question. You know, you'll have to find a way to – you have to tolerate his defense, which at third isn't as bad as it is in the outfield. But you know, I keep going back to the 2016 Cubs. That was a team of parts that fit together. They had Zobrist, who played all over the diamond. They had these different guys who played different places, but these were all places that they played competently, and Maddon was sort of a magician of moving them around and getting the most out of them. Again, like we've been saying, not to beat a dead horse, the Mets don't have those interchangeable parts yet. They're not guys who are extremely versatile defensively, but if doing something like that to preserve players and get bats in the lineup if there are no changes. I think that makes a lot of sense. And the one I think about, the classic one, would be against a tough lefty, you know, you just get McNeil out of the lineup and you slide Escobar over and get Davis' bat in there.
Reggie, since, you know, like you were talking about, if you want to bring us home with this, how do you see it playing out specifically?
In terms of the DH, like I said before, I think we're going to see a lot of platooning, but I would really feel better if we had a consistent answer there. And we'll see. Maybe someone will assert themselves and come out. Dom's been swinging the bat great. If that continues, maybe he cements his position there. But I feel bad because he's a very good defensive first baseman. I don't know if they've had that conversation with Pete. Like, maybe would you want to slide over? I know he says he doesn't. He wants to win a gold glove. And he's worked tremendously hard at first base. You see the improvement of his game. He's still clunky out there, and he makes the plays. They're not the smoothest, but he's making the plays. But, I mean, first base and Dom is just a natural fit. So I just wonder if the Mets have kept that option open as well, sliding Pete there.
You have been listening to the Mets Team Podcast, and before we go, I'm going to pass it over to Mike to see what he had to say.
Is anybody open to trading Pete Alonso?
No, I would say I'm going to go ahead and say no, because I get where he could get a major haul, but I think that is a very rebuilding team thing to do, especially for somebody who became the face of your franchise in his rookie year, you know, other than DeGrom, who is definitely the main face of the franchise. But from an offensive standpoint, Alonso has become the face of the franchise. And I just don't see how somebody who, because of the home run clash with Aaron Judge, who is their face of the franchise, I just don't even see how, from a marketing perspective, you can do that right now. Rich.
When somebody brings something like that up, or would you trade Pete Alonso, trade, you know, a guy that we all kind of really like, you know, kind of our buddy kind of a guy, my answer to that question in any sport, any team, is Tom Seaver got traded. So anybody could be traded. right? I mean, granted, it was for the wrong reasons, but we won't get it. We've talked about that a little bit, 70-73.
Right, but if you say that, that's the kind of thing where, like, you learn your lesson.
But, you know, if it makes you better, if it makes the team better, and I'm not suggesting trading Pete Wood, although I've actually in this podcast suggested maybe trading Pete. I love Pete. I think his personality is great for New York. I think I love what he does. I love his commitment, his blue-collar grit, everything. But if you could make a deal that makes this team better in whatever way, maybe you clear first base for Dom, and maybe the return is something you really need, whatever that something is, and you get great value back, to me, there are so few untradeable players, really. Like, it's a rare bird. And Pete, if the Mets were able to do something that made this team better for a couple of years down the road, you know, something that's durable. I don't want to trade him for a 35-year-old, but, you know, something that's durable that makes this team better. Absolutely. Absolutely I would, because that's what it's about. You know, would you rather say, oh, Pete's our first base and he had 35 home runs every year, or would you rather say, we're going to Battery Park, we're going down to Canyon Heroes, we're watching a ticker tape parade? I think I'll take the second one.
I know, and I hear where you're coming from, and I'll pass it on to you with this, Reggie. I think you would have to get to a Red Sox 2004 position, and I bring up Nomar Garciaparra here, to trade somebody like Pete Alonso, meaning that I feel like it's too early in the lore to make a Nomar Garciaparra type decision. And maybe it's two different eras that we're comparing and contrasting here, but that's still my feeling about what Pete represents within this franchise.
You know, I have to agree in that. I think that's the perfect person you bring up, Nomar. Who would have ever thought the Red Sox would have? He was Mr. Red Sox. and Pete has become on the offensive side like Mr. Met, and everything that he brings with his personality and just even the way he's built like an old school player. He's big, but he's not like cut. He's just like a blue collar lunch pail guy. And that goes a long way in this city. So, I mean, I hope that we can get it done with Pete, because I think back to the 86 Mets and they had these characters like Hojo and Tuffle and Hernandez, and I think he could fit that mold, one of those great players and great characters that could really bring a team together.
I think you guys, that you have to make sure you don't make a Steve Henderson trade. Like Joe Torre named it in the 1977 Mets yearbook, which is still one of the most entertaining Mets anecdotes I've ever seen, when Joe Torre says, I think it's going to become known as the Steve Henderson trade. Well, it didn't, Joe. It didn't. And before we left, I was going to say, I wanted to bring up David Peterson. Mike, I think I'm going to I will make this a double question here, and you can start with a transitional perspective. Since you're the one who breached the subject, I would like you to give your opinion about Pete Alonso and trading him. And then also, since you brought up Dave Peterson earlier, go with Dave Peterson.
Pete Alonso. I'd agree with Rich. If the price is right, you do it. Once upon a time, two teams, the main components of a trade was Fred McGriff and Joe Carter. We know with what happened with one team, and the other guy, as far as I'm concerned, is being shafted out of the Hall of Fame. Big trades can happen. Would I? Yeah, if the price is right. It would open the door for Dom Smith. What if, you know, Dom Smith is... the next Bill Madlock in waiting, bat-wise, because I think he can bat like Bill Madlock once did from the left side. You know, so who knows? I don't know. But it's interesting. I'd be willing to open up the base for Dom Smith, but the price has to be right. I mean, you just don't give up a guy like Pete Alonso, as you say, Sam, for Steve Henderson. It has to be a blockbuster, a real big, you know, Joe Carter, Fred McGriff type of thing. It has to include premium names. So David Peterson, real quickly. Look, I'm just hoping for the best. He's young. He's left-handed. That makes him valuable. That in itself makes him valuable. I'm just hopeful that he's strong and effective, and, you know, giving the Mets a problem insofar as do we keep him in the rotation or can we better suit our needs in the bullpen, if he's productive, that's a good problem to have. You know, it means he's doing his job. And that's what I really hope for, that, you know, he's coming into his third season. And is he really? I mean, we're still talking pandemic baseball. So he's still, his body still isn't accustomed to the real rigors of a 162-game season. So I'm hoping for the best. And he looks good. At times, you know, he was thrown off kilter, but he looks good. So I'm hoping for the best. But as a left-hander, he can, with effectiveness, prove invaluable for this club. Like I said, in order to make it deep into the playoffs, we're going to need four quality starters. I don't know if it's going to be Peterson, Carrasco, Tawan Walker. Which of those three are going to combine with Scherzer and DeGrom to, you know, really punch us through?
Rich, some lost names over here. Jordan Yamamoto, Trevor Williams, David Peterson. Is this just going to be excellent depth up the New York State Thruway, where we could go support a minor league team in the Syracuse Mets?
What do you think about Trevor Williams? I actually really like Trevor Williams. I was happy when they got him, and I thought he did a nice job last year. But
he's probably going to be AAA depth. Jordan Yamamoto probably going to be AAA depth. These guys are right-handed, which is a strike against them right away, you know, because it's the Mets have more righties than lefties. David Peterson, Mike's right. I mean, David Peterson, the Mets need left-handed arms. Goodness knows. You know, they have Alex Claudio on a minor league deal who's tough on lefties, but darn, I'd love to get a really good left-handed reliever who's deadly on lefties, like Josh Hader, like deadly on lefties, Aaron Loop, like deadly on lefties. So David Peterson being left-handed has an inside track. He has an inside track as a starter, inside track as a bullpen arm. Problem with David Peterson, you know, if you've watched baseball more than 10 games in your entire life, you've seen this movie before. You get a lefty like that who needs to rely on precision control, and if that control is there, he could be effective against lefties and righties. You get somebody who doesn't throw real hard in the game, especially game today. If he doesn't have his location, he's going to get pounded, you know, and that's what happened to Peterson last year. He's very up and down, but he did have an ERA, you know, north of 5 last year, which is kind of alarming. And now, granted, he went down to injury, but in the time he did pitch, he had an ERA north of 5. And he had a very good rookie season and pandemic season in 2020. So here's the point with David Peterson. The Mets need a lefty. David Peterson is a lefty. David Peterson has seen success. That's great. The issue is, at this point, he has to be close to perfect to be effective. He's still very young. He may get there. But what word am I using all the time? May and if. I'm using may and if a lot. You know, he's not a sure thing. I would stick with David Peterson. I would love to see him. If he has to be the fifth starter, okay. If he's a lefty out of the bullpen, okay. I'd like to see him stay with the major league team, simply if for no other reason they need left-handed arms. And, yes, while he has to rely on pinpoint control, let's hope he can get there. Let's hope under Jeremy Hefner he can get there.
Let us hope, Reggie. Wherever you want to go with the starting rotation as it pertains to David Peterson.
You know, when I'm, as a Mets fan, I'm always worried about the bullpen. So if he can carve out a niche there, I think that would be good. And he's a big, strong guy. I mean, 6'6", hey, it took these taller guys, it took Randy Johnson a little while to figure it out. So I really think he can be an asset for this team. But I would like to see him in the bullpen to shore things up over there. But I think he could do it. So I'm cautiously optimistic on that front.
Cautiously optimistic indeed. And with that, that is a perfect segue to our final word. You have been listening to the Metsian Podcast, and we are so thankful that you do. I'm first going to go to Mike for your final word. And Mike, also shameless plug away, and you don't owe us any money this podcast.
That's right. I saved myself a couple of bucks, didn't I? Shameless plug, Brooklyn Trolley Blogger. It's just where I hang out and do baseball stuff. And as I always say, the more the modern game upsets me or disturbs me, the deeper I go into its path, and I have a blast doing it. Otherwise, my final word is spring is here. What a beautiful day today was. Enjoy the weather, folks. That's it. Enjoy it. And let's go Mets.
Let's go Mets. Rich, shameless plug, your final word.
Shameless plug is Mesmerized Online. You know, try to get a couple articles up a week on different things. So thank you for the opportunity to say that. And then my final word is two words. It's back. You know, when we thought we didn't have baseball, and we didn't for a while, it was a kind of a rough period. But now we're talking about actual things on the field. Spring training games are on. You know, Mets are on, Yankees are on. And if you have the app, all the spring training games that are on TV are cast on the app for free at this point. So baseball went from being a non-entity, nobody was talking about it in January and early February, to what it becomes. It's all around you every day. It's going to be like this until early November. It's back, and I'm thankful.
And we are thankful, too. Reggie, Wade, thank you so much for joining us tonight on behalf of the Metsian Podcast.
Thank you for having
me.
It's been tremendous.
Of course, man. Give us your shameless plug and your final word.
Well, shameless plug, I'm going to have to shout out the Daily Show with Trevor Noah. I'm a proud member of the staff on that show, so everyone should be checking it out. And I just want to say my final word is hope. Baseball is back. Spring is back. It looks like things are getting back to normal on many fronts, and let's just try to enjoy this ride. I know it's tough as Met fans because we kind of have a love affair with being miserable at times, but I think the tide is changing, and I think we really got to take advantage and have a hopeful mindset. So hope, that is my word.
Hope indeed. Hope springs eternal. Thank you again, Reggie, for joining us. And that's basically where we should leave off. I haven't gotten a chance to watch the hopeful spring training that the Mets are starting. I'm happy that the jerseys are so orange and blue looking, like the old times indeed of New York Mets spring training lore. That's one of my favorite jerseys. I think they should go back to the pullover. Don't even worry about these button-up shirts. And, of course, maybe you need to use some cotton jerseys at some point. But that's just a Buck Showalter Seinfeld reference there. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm so thankful that we're actually talking baseball. I can't wait to actually take in some innings. And considering I carved out a leisurely upstate day for myself, having done a lot of work lately, I've got to carve out some 3 hours in the middle of an afternoon, somehow, some way, coming up with S&Y. I'm back at it. And Rich, real quick, what year of S&Y is this? I guess this would be they're working on 16 years of broadcasting spring training games, correct?
I think inclusive it would be the 17th, right? Because they started in 06.
Yeah.
So this would be their 17th inclusive, yeah.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, whether it be Howie Rose, our friend of the Metsian podcast, having been there, I believe it was last February, or whether it's S&Y, and hopefully one day we'll get one of them on this show, but that's just me making it all about us and me. Let's make it all about the Mets. Let's go, Mets. Take care, everybody. Thanks again. Have a good night.
Good night. Thanks.
Good night, all. Good night, Reggie. Thank you.